doesn't care about you. That's why you need a medical emergency kit. It contains life-saving medications like ivermectin, Z-Pak, and antibiotics. Stock them before they block them.
If you haven't noticed, gold has reached a new high, all-time highs, actually, and keeps going up every day. Why is that? It's because precious metals are a long-time historical store of value. And if you own a portfolio and you have assets in the fiat currencies, i.e. stocks, bonds, cash, or whatever, you're vulnerable to hyperinflation, which is coming as our debt explodes another trillion every 90 days. It's really scary. So how do you protect yourself? Go to Advisor Metals. If you look on any of our CDM.press sites, about halfway down, there's an ad for Advisor Metals. Click on it, fill out the form for your contact info, and Ira Bashatsky will contact you and talk to you. It's an easy conversation. There's no sales pitch. He's completely verified by us. He has a regulatory background we've checked into. We've checked with his bankers. We've checked with his IRA custodians for metals. And we can highly recommend Advisor Metals and Ira. So go to Advisor Metals. If you call them directly, tell them we sent you at CDM, and he'll definitely take care of you. But protect your portfolio because you really need to. It's coming. Thank you.
Okay, so today I'm honored to have Senator Ron Johnson with us. And Senator, first of all, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on, Christine.
All right, so we're going to talk about something that, and I think of you as sort of a star up on Capitol Hill, because you took on COVID and you asked questions, and this is at the beginning of 2020. This is before you invited Pierre Corey to come up to talk about ivermectin in December of 2020. So very early on in 2020, your lights went on. What was it that got your lights rolling in 2020? Because I mean, you were out there. You were out there, and I was watching you because I thought to myself, something's going on here. And so tell me about what was going on behind the scenes, because you really have carried the water, and God bless you for what you've done with all your roundtables, whether they were in Wisconsin first, and then I think I attended four or five of them up on Capitol Hill. What was it that turned your lights on for COVID?
First of all, nothing made sense. I was in the last year, my chairmanship of Homeland Security, and nobody else was holding hearings on early treatment, for example. I held a hearing in February with Scott Gottlieb and other former officials.
He was one of the guys that wanted to shut everybody up. I mean, he got on the Pfizer board, but he was at the FDA, and he was telling people, you know, let's censor so-and-so on social media.
Yeah, I'm not a fan. Mm-hmm. That way, but I had him testify, and he's the one that opened my eyes to the fact that we don't even produce, you know, the active pharmaceutical ingredients or the precursor chemicals for all these drugs, making us incredibly vulnerable. That's February. March, they started talking about shutting down the economy, and I made the comment that we tragically lose tens of thousands of people a year on the highways. We don't shut them down. We need a transportation system. You can't shut down the American economy. And Fauci from the podium there said, "Oh, that's way out there. I'm some kind of nutcase." There really started the marginalization of you know, my discussion of COVID. But then I actually had Pierre Corey in a May meeting with John Ioannidis. I was trying to just lay out the facts for the people that, listen, this could be a very dangerous and deadly disease if you have certain comorbidities. But John Ioannidis did the analysis of the Diamond Princess cruise. It pretty well showed the vulnerable people were elderly and certain comorbidities. If you're young and healthy, right, it was going to be like, you know, bad flu or cold or something, or even a mild one. We're already talking about asymptomatic COVID. You know, how bad could it be? But that was in May. Pierre Corey in that hearing talked about corticosteroids. Of course, he was vilified for it until a few weeks later. They had the hearing on, or they had the study on dexamethasone, a corticosteroid, and it did work. All through that time period, none of the federal government's actions made sense whatsoever. The fact that we didn't have an Operation Warp Speed exploring generic medicines, molecules that already existed to treat the illness. And, you know, Peter McCullough had my first hearing on early treatment in November, you know, it had the four pillars of pandemic response: limit the spread, early treatment, hospital treatment, and then finally vaccines. We basically only concentrated on the first and fourth pillar, and we completely ignored early treatment. Didn't ignore hospital treatment, other than because it made a lot of money pushing remdesivir, which even the WHO recommended against using. So again, none of this stuff made sense to me whatsoever. And what even made less sense is when I would hold these hearings and there was promise of these studies, for example, on ivermectin, you know, Pierre Corey came with his manuscript, just all kinds of evidence that this is a, first of all, a wonder drug, a Nobel Prize winning drug, and you've got the FDA denigrating it.
That was extraordinary to me because I've spent a lot of time in Africa. I know about ivermectin because if you go into lakes in Africa, you can get the parasite and they take ivermectin for it so it doesn't cause blindness. So when and you do give it to horses, and I say that as somebody who's an equestrian. But I couldn't believe that they came out and said, oh, you know, they were trying to say, you know, if a human being took ivermectin, they're taking, you know, a horse medicine. And I'm thinking to myself, everybody knows about ivermectin in that field, okay, at the FDA. Why that man got the Nobel Peace Prize? It was because of the river blindness. And I thought to myself, wow. But again, the public may not know that. So I thought during 2020, they were banking on the ignorance of the public. And that's fair if you want to play a game. But it got to the point in early May, vax was the only answer.
Yeah, because I was talking to the head of Novartis about hydroxychloroquine. He's telling me, yeah, Senator, we're excited about it. They donated, I think, 30 million doses to the national stockpile that was then log-jammed in the national stockpile. They wasn't being distributed. But they're going to do all kinds of studies. You know, they're going to come out in May and June. I can't remember exactly where. Like the end of April, he just went dark. I've never communicated with him since, even though I've been texting him and we've been talking over the phone about what studies they're doing in hydroxychloroquine, which, by the way, anti-malarial drug used for things like lupus and other autoimmune disease. Billions of doses, an incredibly safe profile, and yet all of a sudden now this is the most dangerous drug combined with ivermectin on the face of the planet. And instead, we're going to do everything we can on Operation Warp Speed, and we call it a vaccine, but it's not.
That's right.
You know, this is genetic therapy. This is not a vaccine. They actually changed the definition of a vaccine to encompass this. So again, there were so many things that just seemed utterly corrupt, made no sense whatsoever. And then even worse, when you had these generic medicines out there, and because I was the tip of the spear here, I was hearing story after story of just remarkable recoveries of people basically on their deathbed getting ivermectin, and literally within hours they could breathe again. And so I was pretty convinced that at a minimum, it's a safe drug. Why not give it a shot? And the fact that doctors were not only dissuaded, but threatened against using it just made no sense. It just showed me the utter corruption. I talked to, for example, Francis Collins. This is after both the hydroxychloroquine and the ivermectin hearing late December. And I said, Director Collins, I mean, what have you done to explore these generic medicines? He goes, oh, Senator, we spent hundreds of millions of dollars exploring these things. Okay, well, give me your results. I want to see where you spent that money. Never got, you know, a word out of him. He was just lying to me. You know, just like when I pointed out in about April 2021, as I'm watching VAERS, as a system they had touted in October before they got the EUA, as, you know, this is a great safety surveillance system. You lose 2 days of work because of the vaccine. We're going to be on the phone calling you and figure out what happened, right? Total BS. By April, we had something like 3,000 or 4,000 deaths reported worldwide on the VAERS system. I think back then it was about 46% of those deaths were occurring on day 0, 1, or 2, because we're administering it to the elderly, right? 46% of the deaths reported on VAERS occurring on the day of vaccination within 2 days. So I asked Francis Collins about this in person. He said, well, Senator, we've only identified 6 cases of death caused by the vaccine. That's the child age bearing women. With the J&J, and he said for the other ones, you know, Senator, people die. That's how completely unconcerned he was about the safety signals screaming at him from VAERS, and they remain unconcerned to this day. Well, they have the concern; they're just covering it up, and that's our problem right now. Is the body count is way too high, people not able to access early treatment, and so died on remdesivir and ventilators. And, you know, the harm being done to the vax, over 37,000 deaths worldwide, 1.6 million adverse events. They can't afford to be proven wrong. But as I've been talking about the COVID cartel, they have the power to make it very difficult to prove them wrong. And I'm just witnessing that almost day after day after day as I hear these members of the COVID cartel out there just brazenly lying to the American public and not being held accountable for it.
I know it was kind of lonely for you when you stepped out in front of this, you know, back in 2020, because you really were alone for the most part. And I think Senator Marshall showed up at one point. He's a physician. But how hard was it? Because I know that the pharma lobby is the elephant in the room. And I've seen this, you know, covering politics for 40 years, you know, in Washington, D.C. It's stronger today than it was back in the 1980s or 90s. And I know, having traveled the country and talking to state legislators in the last 3 years as well, that the pharma lobby on the state level is a pretty extraordinarily brazen, more so in the last 3 years than it has been in years past. How tough is it on Capitol Hill with these guys? Because there's a lot of money that's out there.
Yeah, man, I don't view it tough at all. I guess they maybe just know who I am and they don't even bother with me. But I recognize their corruption during my efforts to get rights tri-passed. I had to hold up the FDA user fee bill. Nobody thought I'd do that, and I did. So right. All of a sudden, they're coming to the table, they're talking to me. We made modifications to rights tri to accommodate Big Pharma to get their assurance. They weren't going to support the bill, but they weren't going to sabotage it in the House. So we passed it by unanimous consent in the Senate. Just kick it over the House, and lo and behold, all of a sudden, the House has got this partisan bill. And obviously, I had no chance being passed in the Senate. They had, I think, passed under suspension in the House. Again, had no chance. They knew they were killing right to try. And of course, Big Pharma knew that they were killing right to try as they're passing right to try in the House. So that's where I really came to understand the power and corruption of Big Pharma in the process.
Is, I remember one time in one of your roundtables, Senator, and I have to say, I have to admit also, I didn't understand the wrath that was against the medical doctors also. At the state level, you have the people who are appointed to the medical boards going after doctors. And I've interviewed a lot of doctors who have, because they would give exemptions, you know, and these are not people that are cutting off people's legs, you know, and making them malpractice or anything like that. These are people trying to save people. And the medical boards are going after these doctors, and these doctors are, you know, having to spend, in some cases, hundreds of thousands of dollars to hang on to their license. And we see what has happened to Peter McCullough. We see what has happened to Pierre Corey. Paul Merrick, who I absolutely adore. And these are doctors who were trying to help people, and they were saving people early on. Is there any way that the people on Capitol Hill will address that going down the line? I know it's a state issue, but it seems to me we need some type of and I don't know if it's a piece of legislation. I want to hold people accountable. I'm very much like, you know, I'd like to throw some of these people in jail. I wish we could get a prosecutor in the United States to go after these people, because it seems to me that there's enough evidence here for fraud. But nevertheless, how do we protect the doctors going forward?
Well, first of all, the real heroes of COVID are those doctors, those nurses that have the courage and compassion to actually treat COVID patients. Remember Dr. Jha? In right. My first hearing, Democrat witness, I asked him, well, Dr. Jha, have you treated any COVID patients? No. As a matter of fact, he holed up in his apartment until 3 or 4 months after the vaccine was out. That's how afraid he was of COVID. We've got these other doctors actually going in and exposing themselves and treating people and saving people's lives. So what is so disappointing to me, my daughter was saved by the medical establishment. I mean, she had transverse to great arteries, first day of life, cardiologist came in, did a balloon septostomy, saved her life. 8 months later, her heart's the size of a small plum. In 7 hours of open heart surgery, they rebaffled the upper chamber of her heart. So I revere these people, doctors and nurses who dedicate their lives to saving lives. But the fact that the vast majority of establishment doctors just turn their backs on their colleagues out of fear But the fear was real. I mean, I understand that they're $200,000-$300,000 in loan payments on their medical bills, right? Or on their medical education. They're watching people like Pierre Corey and Paul Merrick. I mean, just Emily qualified physicians. I mean, Paul Merrick is, he's revered himself until he's vilified and destroyed during COVID. So when other doctors see what they could do to somebody like Paul Merrick,
right,
and Pierre Corey, right, and Dr. McCulloch, I mean, doctors aren't stupid. They just kind of put their head down and they shut up. And as a result, people died lacking early treatment using these wonderful drugs, incredibly safe drugs like hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, budesonide. I mean, there's literally a cornucopia of molecules that work, the corticosteroids. They just wouldn't do it. They filed the protocols. And again, I still haven't been able to dig into exactly how hospitals were incentivized to follow that protocol. That, I'm being told there are all kinds of bonuses paid. Hospitals are making hundreds of thousands of dollars on COVID patients. Slap them on a vent. There were so many outrages to what happened in COVID, and the outrages are continuing. And the people that lied to the public early on are continuing to lie. Let me just talk about one lie that's so obvious. When Anthony Fauci was out there and all these agencies were saying, well, we don't know about natural immunity. We just don't know that it can be effective. Just stop and think for 2 seconds. What was their mRNA vaccine going to do? What was it going to rely on? I mean, that mRNA, that didn't kill the virus itself. No, it was going to stimulate the body's natural immune system in a very imperfect way. It was going to show the immune system just the spike protein, and then everything is going to be well, even though that was the most mutatable part of the virus. Whereas opposed, if you got the virus, your body was attacking the entire thing. It recognized the entire virus. So as the virus mutated, as you had different variants, your body's going to be able to handle. So it's just obvious to any lay person that natural immunity was going to be superior to the mRNA injection. And yet our federal health agencies, headed up by Anthony Fauci, lied, bold face for months, saying, well, we can't rely on natural immunity. I mean, that was sick. And you can just sense the outrage in my voice to what these people did. The COVID cartel, the Biden administration, the federal health agencies, big pharma, the media, and the big tech social media giants, what they did and the number of lives that were lost because of what they did during COVID.
Senator, we're going to take a break now. When we come back, let's talk some more about this, because it was an outrageous period, and it's a sad period. And I think when people look back, even 5 years from now, they're going to be ashamed of what they did at the time. All right, I'm back with Senator Johnson. Senator Johnson, we keep on hearing, disease X. We keep on hearing that there's going to be another pandemic. And I have been talking to people who were the authors of the February 2020 Lancet article. These are people that, and just like the Nature article in March of 2020, these, I call them the coronavirus hunters. These are the people like the Batcave woman out in China who go out there looking for coronaviruses. And there's billions of viruses out there. They want to just focus on the coronavirus.
I'm David Cross, and you may know me from my election integrity work, but I also own U.S. Asset Management, a family-owned and operated investment advisory practice. I'm a certified portfolio manager, and my job is to help you make better decisions with your money. One of the things we try to avoid is investing in companies that push the woke agenda. If you're invested with one of the big firms out there, there's a pretty good chance that you're feeding the beast that hates your values. Our company is 100% conservative, and we'd love to have an opportunity to work with you. Check us out at us-am.com and look for our big, proud American Eagle logo.
And then take these specimens back to labs, humanize the mice, figure out if that coronavirus is transmissible to the human being, and then create a countermeasure to it, namely a vaccine, quote unquote, vaccination. And I received documents from the White House Office of Science and Technology. They were dated September 2021. I have to remember these years. And the goal was, the business goal was to create an ongoing mandated seasonal coronavirus. That's their business. the business, that's the end goal of the business. The business model is to keep this going. And I, when I look back now, I now understand why those two articles that were written in February and March of 2020 saying, oh, this came from the wet markets. And what caught my attention in February of 2020 was, how the hell could anybody make a conclusion that it came from the wet markets when there wasn't an investigation at the time? And then I realized as time went on, they always wanted to deflect and say it was the wet markets, because if they admitted that it was a leak from a lab, intentional or not, then all of a sudden that would put the focus and the light on all of the zillions of dollars that we have spent, whether it be at the PREDICT project through USAID for 10 years that started under Obama and that Trump shut down, or the laboratories that are in third world countries that really don't have the security that they were going to have, they were supposed to have. But they didn't want people to say, oh, it's gain of function. It's this Frankenstein science. But now that we know, and Senator Rand's done a really good job on the gain of function. But now that we know that this Frankenstein science is out there, we know that there's over 30 countries in the world that have these quote unquote labs. We know that there are countermeasures that are done, that bioweaponry that's unregulated. There's no regulations in this area. And I did an hour and a half interview with a guy named Dennis Carroll, who oversaw the PREDICT project when it was at USAID. And even he admits in the interview that, you know, it's not regulated. So even when we get through COVID, and even though people are talking about this is going to happen again, we have on the side the Biden administration wanting to concoct amendments to the 2005 International Health Regulations and create this pandemic treaty and at the WHO. And this is happening right in front of the public's eyes right now. There's a meetings, a decision that's supposed to happen in May of 2024. What's your take on everything that's happening with the WHO, the Biden administration turning over our national health sovereignty to the WHO? I mean, when I think about the Tedros and six regional directors could making a decision on something that would, you know, break out in Wisconsin, for instance, and they're going to be making the decisions after what we all lived through for the last, you know, 3.5 years, my head spins. But I commend them on the boldness of keeping this ball and pushing it. But at the same time, the American public doesn't pay any more attention to what's going on at the WHO than they do with what's going on the border. So how do we change this? I mean, what are your thoughts about what Biden's doing at the WHO?
Well, I think the $64,000 question throughout this is, what is the driving agenda? What is really the real purpose of this? Okay, I mean, during COVID, it just seemed like everything was designed to push a universal vaccination program using this mRNA technology, which, you know, you can basically email the genome instructions and you can start producing a vaccine in a couple of days. And there's going to be a great platform, which is why you're out there trying to predict what viruses are going to spring from nature. So you already have that virus patented. So if it does break out, you can make billions and billions of dollars. Okay. But I think there's something more basic, and it's about controlling the population. I think what we've seen and what my eyes have really been opened up during COVID was the utter corruption of science. And by the way, yes, Eisenhower warned us about this in his farewell address, you know, which is famous for the military industrial complex. But his next warning was government funding of science. The result of that was going to be not, you know, people really focusing on true science, but people chasing grants. And so you're going to end up with a scientific and technological elite that are driving public policy. And we've seen that during climate change. I have no idea where you're on climate change. Again, my belief is climate has always changed, always will. There's not anything we can do about it. Okay, you can spend trillions of dollars and you'd be wasting all of it. But we are just...
So you believe there's a God as opposed to the scientist being God. I agree with you.
Again, when you just take a look at basic facts, for example, the sea level in the Bay of San Francisco since the last glaciation period has risen 390 feet. That's in a 20,000 year time period. We're worried about a few inches. You know, there's nothing we can do to hold back the tide. Okay, it's insane. It's lunacy what we push. And I think what ended up happening is the powers to be they realized they weren't going to be able to use climate change to gain the kind of control over society that they desired. And you know, if you listen to Rick Bright and Anthony Fauci at a Milken Institute, I think October 2019, and they're bemoaning the fact that we don't have a universal vaccination program, the flu just doesn't do it for us. You know, it's probably going to take a pandemic. Well, they got the pandemic. And so they were just hell-bent on using that pandemic to push a universal vaccination program. Look at how unvaccinated people were treated, how they are treated today. And I do want to, you know, my mind has been definitely expanded when it comes to vaccines in general. And this all goes back to the smallpox vaccine. And read about the history of that and how that was used to coerce people. And the cities in England that refused the vax ended up having lower rates of smallpox than the ones that were vaccinated. I mean, that's it's right. A fascinating history to lead. But again, I understand the sexiness of being able to prevent disease with a vaccine. I just understand how wonderful that could be, right? And maybe on a one-off or two-off basis, it probably works, okay? But when all of a sudden you go from three vaccine doses on the childhood vaccine schedule to over 72 without ever testing these vaccines against a true placebo, not testing them given in combination, recognizing that every time you give somebody a vaccine, you're messing with their immune system. Gee, why do we have all these autoimmune disease problems nowadays? Why do we have this problem with chronic disease? You're not even able to ask the question because the science and the media have been utterly corrupted by, I would say, big ag culture, big pharma. That's what's going on now. So that just carries over to the World Health Organization now. They've got an opportunity to amend this treaty and basically take away national sovereignty when it comes to pandemics, where you give the head of the WHO the ability to declare these pandemics, and that will put in place a series of dictates that will take away your sovereignty. Now, nobody knows exactly what these things are because it's still being debated pretty much in secret. Right. But this is highly concerning. And the last world organization you want in charge of anything is the World Health Organization.
Well, I know that Tedros was heavily investigated when he was Minister of Health in Ethiopia, because I happen to know he's a former prosecutor who actually did about 500 or 600 investigations of the Global Fund to Fight AIDS, Tuberculosis, and Malaria. And Tedros was connected to that at the time. And there was a lot of fraud there when he was Minister of Health in Ethiopia. So the fact that you'd have a crook at the head of an organization deciding what the response would be in Wisconsin if Ebola or something broke out is pretty frightening. Let me ask you this. I had heard at one point that there were some senators who were vax injured up on Capitol Hill, but they didn't want to go. They didn't want to go public. Is that a true rumor?
I believe it is, but I also believe that there are senators that are vax injured that believe it's long COVID because that's been the excuse. Mm-hmm. One of the things we're battling against is just the basic human tendency to never admit you were wrong. So the COVID cartel, they can't afford to be proven they're wrong because the body count's so high, but just people's individuals. They don't want to admit that maybe they should have looked into this a little bit more carefully. Maybe they should have listened to some of the naysayers, the science deniers, the people spreading misinformation. Maybe they should have listened to those folks a little bit more carefully. You know, the doctors who push this on their patients, that they don't want to admit that maybe they pushed something that might have killed somebody or permanently disabled them. Members of Congress, they voted for the funding for this. They also videos, hey, get the vax, They don't want to admit that they recommended something to their constituents that might harm them. So we've got an entire society globally that's in a massive state of denial. Nobody wants to admit they were wrong, either pushing this or accepting it. So that's a real problem. So I think, and I won't name names, but I think there are people that definitely were vaccine injured. I've kind of heard the story, and to me, it's just, it's obvious you're vaccine injured. And a lot of them are, it's long COVID. They're being told it's long COVID.
That's right.
They won't treat vaccine injuries. They'll treat long COVID, They won't treat vaccine injuries.
So that brings that brings me to what I'm mad as hell about. And that happens to be that I know since January of 2021, at the very beginning of the rollout, that some of the vax injured, and I was interviewing a lot of vax injured between January and June before I could first put them on camera. Many of these people who came to me and were telling me about their injuries, and there were multiple injuries. Thank you very much. They weren't just, you know, blood clots. There were multiple injuries. They were vascular. They were neurological. They were cardio. And I knew about that some of them had given their blood to NIH as early as January 2021. And that NIH, FDA, CDC, NIAID, and the White House, thank you very much, were put on notice that these people had neurological, vascular, and cardio injuries at the time. We have only, in April of 2021, acknowledged the cardio. We have not to date officially recognized the vascular and the neurological. Why haven't we, and why has nobody up on Capitol Hill demanded to have that information released from the FDA and from NIH? Because Francis Collins, who claims he believes in God, has, we know that he and Anthony Fauci have in fact covered up, and they tried to cover up the lab. We know that they didn't want vax hesitancy. So that's probably why that they didn't want to acknowledge any of the vascular neurological. But by not officially acknowledging the vascular and the neurological, they have harmed people because the doctors did not know how to treat these people that were walking into their offices.
Well, the reason it's not being investigated is what I said before. Nobody wants to admit they were wrong. Very few people had the opportunity, like I did, of talking to Michael Yeadon very early on, the 30-year vice president of Pfizer, specializing right. in technology. You know, when I first talked to him, he was literally beside himself. He could not believe what his colleagues were doing. He said, Ron, you know, there's a long list of ingredients we don't put into injectables because they're toxic to the body. When I found out my colleagues were going to actually design something that was going to have the body produce its own toxin, it's the spike protein. That's the nasty part of this virus, right? And right. we're going to have the body produce that. Now, we were lied to, and this is where Michael Yeadon's excellent. He says the 13 lies or whatever, how many lies we were told. Just bold-faced lies. He said, Ron, I know they're lying to us. I know they know they're lying to us. You know, we were educated together. But he said, you know, first of all, it's encapsulated in a lipid nanoparticle that is designed to permeate difficult-to-permeate barriers, like the blood-brain barrier, okay? They had a biodistribution study in rats. They kept it hidden. Right. Japanese regulators found that out. We were told it's going to stay in the deltoid muscle, you know, last for just a couple days while the body produced antibodies, and then you're good to go, right? No, they knew it was going to biodistribute all over the body. And also, this wasn't classic messenger RNA. This was modified RNA that we now know, and we've only studied up to a couple months, remains in the body for months. Mm-hmm. So it distributes all over the body. It attaches to a cell. It hijacks the cell's mitochondria, its manufacturing capability. Producing a spike protein that is expressed, toxic to the body, and so the body attacks it. That causes inflammation all over the body. Heart, you get myocarditis. In the spinal cord, you get all kinds of neurological issues. You in the brain, I mean, there have been studies that show alarming cases of mad cow disease. All right. this is being ignored. All this is being covered up because nobody wants to even consider that what they did harmed people to the extent it's harming people, even though their safety surveillance systems across the world are screaming at them. Excess deaths are spiking in 2021 and 2022 with young people, you know, working age people that were forced to get this through work. I mean, there's all kinds of safety signals. None of it's being put together by the authoritative organizations, you know, government or these words. This is all being done by individual researchers that then get marginalized as a bunch of crackpots. So again, it's the word, it is getting out. People are seeing it, but it's not coming from authoritative voices, according to the media. And so it's still being covered up and ignored pretty easily.
Senator, thank you very much for what you've done, because you really did the person who stepped out. You took a lot of bricks for this. And I think looking back, more and more people, when they realized how you brought this forth in terms of offering the roundtables to everybody, because it wasn't just the doctors. I know that the vax injured that I still interview, they are very appreciative of what you did. So I just want to acknowledge you as we close out this segment, because I think what you've done is really God's work, bringing forth, you know, everything. It was not easy.
I appreciate that, but I'm still frustrated by not being, I mean, we're just scratching the surface. There's got to be a format or a forum to get this out in its totality and do it well. I mean, it's so frustrating to me not to be able to communicate this effectively.
Well, we're going to give you every opportunity to do that. And I just want to thank you for this. Thank you very much, Senator.
Thank you.